Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler, and we love doing this podcast and sharing information and great guests with you so that you can parent in a way that works in your family. And we just appreciate you being here and encourage you to go to mightyparenting.com and check out all that we have to support you along this journey. We know it can be challenging, but you don't have to do it alone. And we are here to support you. And today we are talking about a topic that I think is a challenge for many of us. I know it is for us, and we're talking, or for my family anyway, I know we're talking about kids' financial behaviors and attitudes. And personally, when I was bringing my kids up, as you know, they're in their 20s now, and giving them what they needed to be productive and healthy individuals, instantly I went to finances. And about right after I started thinking about that, I got really stressed out because personally, finances are not a strong suit of mine. So it was one of those things, if I can't do it right, how in the world can I help my teens and my young adults take care of their finances? Do you understand what I'm talking about, Sandy?
Oh, I understand. I've walked with you as your friend through all of that. And you're definitely open about, you know, your challenges with finances and some of the things you guys have gone through. And for me, parenting around finances is very interesting because there's so many factors, so many nuances to doing it. I know my parents gave me a really strong financial foundation in the areas of like personal financial responsibility and saving and budgeting. And I found that pretty easy to pass along to my girls. I started when they were really little, like scary little, and just kind of kept doing it a bit at a time. And I thought this was no problem and this was super easy to pass along. And then I started finding out maybe not quite as easy as I thought. As they're getting through college and having more that they have to manage and more that they're responsible for, I'm seeing how much their personalities and other factors have affected them and how different they are. And so I find myself at a time where I thought we were pretty much done with that, having to dig in again, in some small ways with one kid and in huge ways with the other. And I feel like I really could have used a heads up a few years ago on some of the points to cover with my girls. And yeah, in today's show, I feel like we're giving parents that. I feel like we're getting that heads up and maybe some course corrections and some insights. And I know we're going to get a ton of valuable information from our guest. We have Carrie Schwab Pomerantz with us today. And Carrie is a leading advocate for financial literacy and one of America's most trusted sources for financial advice. She has devoted her career to helping men and women from all walks of life achieve financial security. In addition to that, she oversees Charles Schwab's corporate philanthropy and employee volunteer programs, which aim to strengthen the communities where Schwab operates. And so, Carrie, welcome to Mighty Parenting. It's so great to have you here with all of us today.
Absolutely. I'm totally honored. And I can't tell you, I am so passionate about helping young people get started. In fact, I was just in physical therapy yesterday, and this young woman, 30 years old, said, I just don't know what to do. I know to save, but I don't understand the 401k. I don't understand what the Roth is. And just so many young people really don't know how to get started.
I know that at that point when, you know, they're graduating college and they're starting jobs, they're moving out on their own, there is a lot more there that they just don't get and they need to understand. And hopefully that's building on a strong financial base. And I know you're very active in the financial world, but last year you did something that was really intriguing to us. And you conducted a survey of 16 to 25 year olds to understand their financial behaviors and their financial attitudes. What prompted you to do that survey?
Well, as you mentioned, I've been focusing on financial literacy for all people from all walks of life, all different ages. But we really wanted to focus on 16 to 25 year olds because that's really when young people get started and that's when managing money becomes so important. And especially it's a time where you can really start to build your financial security. So we wanted to understand these young people's attitudes and behaviors to see, what possibly could be getting in their way of their financial future, or possibly could there be some, interesting changes in the way people look at money. I've been focusing on this and surveying people for 20 years, and it's interesting how, attitudes and behaviors evolve.
When you did the survey, was it good news or bad news?
Well, there was the good news and there was the bad news, right? So it was really interesting to me. A lot of interesting things. But what it didn't occur to us is that these young people, I think it was 80% said that they witnessed their parents experience financial hardship. 80% of these young people. So if you think about it, the Great Recession was 10, we're talking about the Great Recession, which was 10 years ago. So these young people were as young as 6 years old to, 16 years old. So they're very impressionable. So they witnessed their parents, yet they were still very optimistic about their future financial success, and actually maybe a little overly optimistic. For instance, they think that they're going to be better off than their parents, and they think that they're going to get an inheritance when in fact, I don't know, maybe 10% of Americans ever receive an inheritance. So they're a little bit misguided, but the good news is that parents are talking more to their young adults or to their children about money than before. In the old days when I first started this, parents put talking about money behind talking about sex and drugs, and now it supersedes that topic, which is good news.
That it's interesting because both of my kids, who are now 25 and 26, we were very transparent, as Sandy mentioned at the beginning. We went through financial crisis and we lost everything and have had to rebuild, and they've seen that struggle. And
wow.
It was interesting because both of our kids, I think you nailed it. They went, we're not going to be like our parents. And now that they're doing all their finances on their own, they have a skill set. And I think the transparency of sharing what was going on without giving them the stress of fixing it was really important to their financial literacy. And, how are we as parents, how do we teach our kids about finances? Is it just through example of what we do wrong, or is there other things that we're doing?
No, I think it's really important to start early. And, I meet parents, friends and whatever, in my daily life, who sort of don't want to burden their kids about money. And I think that's really the wrong way to go. And I think that for me, with my own children, and what I advocate for other parents, is to start the conversation early. Start with an allowance when they're, 5 years old. I remember and every child is different, right, when it comes to an allowance. And whether you put chores on it or not, that's up to you. I personally just feel, it's a great time for young people to experience money and make choices. So start as young as you can when the child is emotionally ready and interested.
What about bringing the kids, because we're talking about our teens, our young adults, what about bringing them into some of the financial decisions of the family? Is that a good idea? Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you mentioned, I think, Sandy, that you learned about savings and budgeting. So, I talked about starting with a young person when they're, 5 years old, but certainly as they age, you want to start adding in new concepts, that are a little bit more sophisticated. So as a young person, Well, you know, even at the 5-year-old, 7-year-old, when they have an allowance, and that's the only money they have to make choices with that money. So they're learning to make choices and put and place value on money. But as they get older, say 10 years old, and, you know, they start getting money for birthday presents and so forth, it's really important to teach them or bring them into a financial institution and open up an account and, you know, just experience that so that they become comfortable with the financial world. And then, of course, when a teenager, I always believe in when they're about 16 years old, consider getting them a credit card and teaching them, you know, about how to use it. It's sort of like teaching your child how to drive before they go off to college. Teach them how to wisely pay off a credit card on a monthly basis, which, by the way, that was one thing that we found out from this survey is while these young people were very optimistic about their lives and they were talking more to their parents, they still had not very such good money habits. You know, they still were having, you know, extraordinary amount of debt. They were missing payments, not, you know, necessarily, you know, paying it off on a timely basis and so forth. So, you know, we still have a lot to teach our young people.
Well, so you said a few things I want to dig into, but let's start with these bad habits, because the bad habits, yes, eventually it can be the kids, but truthfully, it's going to start with the parents. It's going to start with what we teach them, and it's going to start with what we model for them. So
Absolutely. Let's
bite the bullet and let you, Carrie, tell us what are the bad habits that we're teaching our kids.
Well, I mean, you know, the bad habits is living beyond our means. I mean, that's a huge problem in the United States. So first and foremost, as you mentioned, budgeting, you know, sitting down, how much money do you bring in? You know, taking a look at what are your essential expenditures and what are your non-essential expenditures? And, you know, where are you saving? You know, we highly recommend that a 20-year-old or even a 15-year-old start trying to save for their retirement. And, you know, we tell 20-year-olds to save 10 to 15%. So when my son graduated from college, we sat down and we created a budget. And by the way, you can do this also at home, obviously. We talked about role modeling and there's ways to do it that are appropriate depending on the age. But before they go off on their own, have them write down a budget. How much will their rent be, food and so forth? But put a line item in there, 10 to 15% of your income to go to savings, and then build your life around that. And that's what parents need to do too. And, you know, of course, with parents, we have a lot more expenses and, you know, responsibilities, but a really great way to really get to understand where your money's going is to start writing it down and really taking and again, bucketing the essential to non-essential and, you know, where can you cut back? Or maybe you're just fine. You know, that's also could be the case.
I know when you said, you know, having your 20-something start saving for retirement, my girls are both early 20s now. And when they got their first jobs, when they were actually going to get a paycheck, we talked to them about creating Roth IRAs. And one was all in, gangbusters. Yep, no problem, I'm going to do this. The other one, she doesn't like money. She doesn't like to think about money. She doesn't want to deal with money, which is another good reason for her to do a Roth. I'm like, it's the least you'll ever have to think about it because you don't have to do basis and everything. But I caught her attention with that something my mother had shown me, and I don't even remember which expert's information she got it from, but it was that old trick. And Carrie, maybe you'd like to enlighten us a little bit even about this, is that if you save for 10 years, you save, was it $1,000 a year for 10 years, starting when you're 20 versus waiting and starting when you're 30 and running those numbers?
Yes, there is an example that we look at, you know, at financial institutions of people who start early versus somebody, say, who waits 10 years from you know, that point to save. And while this person... The first person, well, what happens is the first person saves a lot more and they start early. And what you see is because of the power of compound growth, that your money starts to really grow at an accelerated rate, which you don't get if you wait longer. And I don't have the numbers, the difference, you know, that it's like you said, $2,000 a year for 10 years. And then your friend starts 10 years later with the $2,000. the first person to save has, I don't know, at least twice as much money saved.
And they only
at the end of the day.
That was the part that really got. That was the part that got my daughter. Was the first person only did it for 10 years. The second person started when they were 30 and did it all the way through to retirement at 65 and had less money.
Yes, that's a fact, and that's just all about math and the idea of compound growth, which means that your interest or your growth starts earning interest and growth on itself. If that makes sense, so your interest is earning interest as well as the the principal that you save.
So my point there really was, I got a little excited about that just because I was so excited as a parent to be able to tap into my daughter's motivation for saving money.
I think that's wonderful. And Sandy, what I wanted to point out in this particular survey about what was most concerning to me was that girls showed much more determination in having financial independence than boys. Yet they have less savings and investing, showing a gender gap or discrepancy. So we are not teaching our daughters to save and invest the way we are our boys. And so I love to hear that you are showing that example, which I wish I had at my fingertips right now. It's a great example of the power of investing, that you're having your daughter start as early as possible. Because unfortunately in this survey, half of girls versus boys had investment accounts. And these young women, they spent less than the boys. They were more likely to have a second job, but they had 40% or less in savings than the boys. I'm sorry, 60%, I think it was, than the boys. So, the math doesn't add up. So we definitely need to bring our daughters along with the power of savings, budgeting, and investing.
And Carrie, do you think that that is just because we're not teaching them those skills, or was there other factors that contribute to that huge discrepancy?
Yeah, we definitely dug down because, like I said, the math didn't work out. The girls are doing all the right things. They have the right attitudes. They're saving more, and putting it a higher priority. But in digging down more, it just gets back to social and cultural differences in how we raise our children, unfortunately. And you like to think that we've moved on beyond this. But what we found is, and this is not just our studies, but others, is that, for instance, we pay less for the same chores to our daughters than we do our boys. That was a third party study, which was just appalling. And I can't imagine any of us purposely doing that. So it may be just more of an aggregate that just overall, let's just say, Sandy, you have two daughters, you may pay less just not knowing, and where somebody else who has two boys may pay them more. Who knows? But the point is we have to be more cognizant of that. And then also what we do know, I mentioned that we've done a lot of surveys around young people and parents and so forth. And what we knew from our surveys, and I've seen in other surveys, so third parties, that we talk to our daughters differently than our sons when it comes to money. With our daughters, we talk just about savings and budgeting, household expenditures, which again is so important. It's the basics to putting money away from you for you in the future, for your future. But if you really want to grow your money and have the financial security that you deserve, you need to invest. And so what we found in the survey is that parents are talking to their sons about investing and borrowing, which again is that's where wealth creation happens. So it's, anyway, it's just, I don't think we do it on purpose, but it's something for us to be more cognizant about, that we've got to bring our daughters along.
It's really interesting that you are looking at it as budgeting is over here, investing is over there, and oftentimes we stop at the budgeting. I find that to be so intriguing, and it seems like that's where the big gap is. That's the pitfall that we're getting in teaching this generation how to match money. Am I reading that correctly?
Wait, that we're not bringing our daughters along, or can you say that again?
That we're just focusing more on the budgeting part of it. We're not going on the investing side of it and the money creation and the wealth creation. It almost seems like in certain situations, and maybe in different socioeconomic groups, as well as gender, we stop at the budgeting and stop at the basics. We're not giving our kids what they need to take it to the next level.
Yeah, and we're, you know, as a society, we're still learning the power of investing. And thankfully for the 401k, which has become the most prevalent way to, for a, you know, an employer to provide, you know, retirement savings, is sort of forcing us as a society to be more involved in understanding investing. But you're absolutely right. I think parents don't understand, you know, how to invest. You know, teachers don't understand how to do it. You know, it's a societal thing. And, you know, if you look back from the prior to the 401k, Americans received a pension fund for their for retirement from their employer. So they didn't have to think about how much do I need to save, how much do I need, or how do I invest, what do I invest in. And then with the 401k, which really came about in our generation, you know, we were forced to not only save for ourselves, but we were forced to learn how to invest. And I think we're still coming a long way. We still have a long ways to really understand the, you know, I'm talking about as a total society, by the way, to the power of investing. And that's why I'm such a big advocate, because it really does. It does make a huge difference in your financial security in the long run. And given girls, women, we tend, you know, we live longer, we earn less money, right? I mean, we all know we earn about 80 cents on the dollar, and we tend to go in and out of the workforce to take care of parents or children. So we have less money to save with for, you know, a longer retirement period. So again, it gets back to the daughters as well, the importance of not only saving, but also investing.
So Carrie, this goes back to financial literacy. And yeah. What I just heard you say, which is what I experience as well, is that as a society, we don't understand investing well. Investing was not a middle-class sport prior to our generation. So if we find ourselves in a place where, okay, we're raising these teens, we're launching these 20-somethings, and we go, wow, yeah, I haven't taught them that, but I don't know how to do it. What do you recommend we do in that case if we don't have the skills to teach them?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. There's so much information online today. I of course would love to promote SchwabMoneyWise.com, which is a website that my team and I created specifically for novice investors. It's a site that has tools and calculators. In fact, Sandy, it has an investing or a compound growth saving calculator that gets young people really excited. You know, there's also a debt calculator. So, you know, how quickly can I pay off my debt? So SchwabMoneyWise.com is a great resource. Certainly there's books out there. Beth Kobliner, who she and I were on the U.S. President's Advisory Council on financial capability together. She wrote a book for 20-something-year-olds. There's some good stuff, but as an advocate, I'm a really big believer in getting financial help from a professional. And there's a lot of great financial institutions out there that have the highest of ethics. And I would feel very confident that you'll get, you know, some good help in learning how, in simple help, by the way, to invest in a diversified way. And that's the key, you know, being very diversified. It doesn't have to be rocket science. You can, you know, invest in a what we call a robo fund, you know, which automatically provides asset allocation in your investing, or mutual, you know, ETFs, which are low cost funds that invest in, you know, thousands of companies. And there's easy ways for people to get help and to start investing.
And so this would be a place to, one of the things we advocate on Mighty Parenting is being transparent as age appropriate with our kids. And so this could be a good place to go, hey, I know these are tools you need and I don't have them. So let's go find some resources and figure it out together.
Yeah. And you know what? And again, there's a lot of workshops out there. I mean, what a great mother-daughter experience to learn about investing together. You know, I know it, you know, Schwab, I don't mean to promote Schwab, but we have workshops all the time. And again, Schwab Money Wise or books or podcasts such as yours on some of the basics of investing. And I think what people need to know, again, that it doesn't have to be rocket science. It's picking some, there are what we call mutual funds or type of funds that pick the investments for you. You can automatically have an asset allocation, meaning a percentage of stocks, bonds, and cash based on your risk tolerance and your time frame. So you don't have to be a stock picker, in other words, to be an investor. And I remember, so just a little story, when I first got out of college, it was about a year afterwards, and the IRA was just coming out, and I called my dad to ask him which mutual funds I should choose. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to get the hot tip, right, from my dad. and he just said, just pick two equity mutual funds. Just pick two. And I remember being perturbed, right, because I was expecting some hot thing. And you know, now I'm, you know, adult and I've been in the business a long time. And he's right. It wasn't about picking the hot mutual fund. It was really about participating in the markets, in equities. And you know, there's standard and that's where you're going to get your growth and your financial security. So, again, there's low cost asset allocation type mutual fund out there for people to invest in.
And it starts with the basics. I have a young cousin and another cousin who's in his 30s. My cousin in his 30s is a financial advisor. And so my younger cousin, who at the time, I think he was about 11, maybe 12. And so he went and said, okay, you know, this is actually his uncle. He's like, so what, you know, I've got this money, what should I do with it? And the financial advisor looked at me and said, well, do you have your emergency fund? So, you know, we got kind of excited here. We talked about the investing side of it, but because, you know, Judy brought that good point and said, well, you know, you're talking about the budgets and the savings, and then you're talking about investing, and we do need to connect those. But we also heard you tell us that our young people, what you found out in the survey, is that they do have some not great habits. They're accumulating large debt and they're missing making payments on those things. So again, I'm like, okay, so we need to go back to basics first to have that money to invest and to teach our kids the foundational skills.
Right.
We're at a time in a place in our country where it seems to me that the message young people are getting from our culture is, as long as for a house or a car or school or achieving a dream, take on as much debt as, it doesn't matter, you know, take on any amount of debt. What do you have to teach us about that?
Okay, so you're right. There is definitely misunderstanding about what is good debt and bad debt. And that definitely came out in our survey where young people felt like buying a home was potentially bad debt. Even having a college loan was bad debt. Let me just say right up front, too much debt of any debt is bad debt. You know, the most that anybody should have in their, you know, within their budget is 36% of their income going to pay off debt. After that, it's prohibitive and it really can set you back. So if you could try to live within that, you might, you know, you should be okay. But let's get back to the good debt, bad debt. Good debt, we call is like college loans or a home loan. And the reason those are good is because in a sense, they both appreciate. Right. If you go to college, you're going to earn a lot more than if you don't go to college, and you're going to be in a position to pay that off. So you're sort of leveraging money for something better in the long run, and that's the same with a home. Now, admittedly, you know the home market goes up and down, and I'm a big believer that you should not buy a home as an investment. It's not a retirement plan. It's a place to live, but historically, you know, that homes do appreciate over time, and you do get some tax write-offs and so forth, and you know, a sense of ownership. So that would be considered good debt. But again, like with a home, you shouldn't have more than, I'm just going to say, 25% of your income going to a home. Otherwise, you're going to be, house poor. And that's just not a way to live. And that's then when you get into credit cards, which is not good debt, because those assets that you're buying do not appreciate. You know what I mean? They're, mm-hmm. you know, like a car, the minute you drive off, we all know this, right? The minute you drive off the car lot, I think your car depreciates with $5,000 right away or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's not an appreciable asset that you're buying. So that's the difference between good debt and bad debt. And I think there's a confusion among, at least in the survey showed, young people are confused about that. And they are, like you said, taking on a lot of debt. Now, admittedly, there's a whole nother world out there about this whole college loan thing. And that's, you know, we could have a whole podcast on that about young people taking on debt, you know, too much debt for college. That's a trap. You know, if I haven't, my next life, I'm going to take on universities and what they're charging young people for college. That just really upsets me.
Well, so I'd just like to interject, because I agree, Carrie, that we can't do the justice to that topic. But I also would like to maybe just share something. We've been talking with my daughter. I have one that graduated debt-free, one that's graduating with a couple of small loans, but she's considering studying abroad. And she's figuring out whether or not she'd want to do that. And it was most interesting to me is that at one point in the conversation, you know, we didn't have numbers from the school yet. So I said, well, just ballpark this, you know, the absolute maximum it could possibly be. And I think it was, she figured it could be $25,000 would be the absolute maximum this could cost with no scholarships.
Yeah.
And she just looked at me, she said, Mom, I don't understand what $25,000 is.
And I thought
that was just something for us to remember, is that our kids don't understand these numbers. And the traditional advice, like you just told us too, said, you know, typically we go, okay, if we're going to teach somebody, we say, compare the loan you're taking to your income. Well, these kids don't have an income either.
They don't have the context. They don't have the context to be able to understand money in general, I don't think, anymore.
No. I mean, it is complicated. And, you know, going back to SchwabMoneyWise.com, I mentioned there's a debt calculator, and you could go in there and put you can put the numbers in and say, okay, to pay this off, you know, if I'm charged this much interest and I'm making these kind of payments, how long will it take me to pay this off? And ultimately, if I'm paying interest on top of that, what was the total cost for that trip? I mean, you know, for that semester.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts things, you know, in to reality right away. And of course, you know, I don't, you know, if you're helping them, you know, pay for it. If a parent or grandparents are helping pay, that's a different story. But to saddle our young people with a lot of debt the minute they get out of college is really, it's very unfortunate, because it's already so expensive to live, you know, today on your own, you know, especially in cities like, you know, San Francisco or New York or so. It's prohibitive. So anyway, if we can avoid saddling our children with too much debt, that much better. Yeah. And by the way, I want to say, this is sort of a side thing that we talk a lot about also, is that a lot of people tap into their 401k or their retirement savings to pay for their children's college. And we highly recommend anybody not to do that. As a parent, we feel tugged, right? It's like our responsibility to pay for it, but not at the expense of our own retirement, because young people, again, can get loans and they can get scholarships and grants. But you, as an older person, as a parent, cannot get that for your retirement. You know, this is it. You know, what you save is what you'll have.
Yeah. And in the show notes, we'll put links to a couple of other episodes where we've touched on that topic. And so if something as a parent and you're listening, you're going, well, but how would I do this? How would I help them? We'll put some links in the show notes from mightyparenting.com so you can pop over and explore those. But I appreciate you bringing that up here, because it is hard. As parents, we want our kids to have a great future. And again, too, you talk about this, a lot of us are parenting. We went through the Great Recession in different ways. My husband decided to make a career change right when this was kicking off. It was not a good time, and we didn't know, you know. So yeah, our kids live with those things, and it, as you said, it's shaped them. They are still optimistic, and they learned some great lessons because we had to change the way we were doing some things, and there were some really great things that came out of it because at that moment we didn't even have the choice of just handing them things on a silver platter. We had to go, we're changing our lifestyle here, folks.
Yeah. You know, you alluded to this, and I'm sure you've talked about this in your other shows, but emergency fund, emergency fund is critical for every one of us to have. And what we tell people, 3 to 6 months of essential or non-discretionary expenditures, you know, somehow easily accessible to you. And so maybe some high interest money market fund or something like that. So that if something, you know, a loss of a job or a car breakdown or something, that you're not having to tap into, investments or take out a loan. It's there to sort of bridge you at least temporarily through some hardship. And again, all generations, everybody needs that. You know, a young person, that should be part of their budget as well. And for people who are entering into retirement, which this is not for, they might have a year's worth of cash. So it kind of depends. So cash is or emergency funds really important to your financial well-being.
And Carrie, what would you say to the family that is living paycheck to paycheck right now and they don't know exactly how to save for that? What would you suggest would be some tips for them?
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many as you mentioned, I run the Charles Schwab Foundation, and we do a lot of financial literacy for also, say, underserved populations. And, what I've basically learned, and you've alluded to this, but the lack of financial literacy cuts across Americans from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. It's not specific to socioeconomic situation. But what I also will tell you is that people from all backgrounds of money, whether it's middle income or lower income, can find ways to save. And I have found that through our national program with the Boys and Girls Club, which is the largest youth agency in the United States, serving primarily underserved kids. And these young people, they have a summer job and they start putting little bits of money away. And it becomes like an endorphin, right? They would just want to save more. And then it opens them up for college. And by the way, financial literacy or some type of basic financial course has shown that those who take it are more likely to go on to college. So going back to the paycheck to paycheck, the point is that if you sit down and really look at what you're spending and being creative, maybe it means downsizing in your home. Maybe it means just renting. Maybe it means renting out a room in your place. Maybe it means your kids, will go to junior college for a year or two before they go to the big university. So, hopefully people can just be creative. I will say there are nonprofits that help people with budgeting and really taking a look at creative ways to budget and also to get the benefits that they may not be, the governmental benefits that they may be entitled to, like the child care credit. A lot of the utilities have programs to, bring down their cost and so forth. And I think with some little bit of money mentoring, which I've seen from our other programs, like with AARP, people over 50, again, with some little coaching, a little knowledge about budgeting, you can find little ways to put money away.
So when we're talking about our teens and our young adults, and they're part of our household, I think it's a good idea, and what we teach here at Mighty Parenting, sit down and talk to them and say, we've decided that we want to start saving more money. And you may tell them exactly what that's for, and it might be retirement, it might be a vacation, it might be for their college, it could be for anything. But ask them to participate in that conversation. Ask them to brainstorm with you and look for places to do that. And I think that a lot of times we'll be surprised, plus we'll be getting their buy-in up front instead of just coming back later and feeling bad and feeling guilty and telling them that we're cutting back on something.
Yeah. No, I think that's wonderful. And, you know, again, kind of getting back to allowance, even without, you know, some financial hardship within the family, you know, if they have a little bit of money to put away, or a little bit of their own money, then they can make their choices. I mean, I remember when my son was 7 and he was, you know, begging me for these Pokemon cards. And I said, Wynn, you know, you can pay out of your own allowance. And, you know, he thought about it and thought about it. He said, I think I'll pass.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, right? So like you said, they value their money very differently than yours. But if they can participate, like, you know, a friend of mine, daughter was really into the horses, and she, you know, made money in the summers doing it. So then she could pay for it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's wonderful lessons to talk to your kids, giving them, you know, different ways to, you know, to like family expenditures. Okay, family, let's go out to dinner, or let's make dinner and go to the grocery store, but this is all the money we have. You guys kind of figure it out. You know, it's just certain ways to start to use money. Now, another thing I wanted to point out, this is a study that we did a long time ago, but young people I encourage my children each to start getting jobs in the summer when they were, you know, 16 years old. And that's part of what they use to save in their retirement account as well. But what we've learned is that those young people who do have summer jobs or, you know, work are going to be are more likely to be what we call stellar savers. They see the value of saving because they understand what money is, and, you know, they place value on it. So I think for parents, that's another great tool, not only, you know, being a money mentor, but also encouraging your children to earn their own money.
Well, I love that.
Yeah, this has been great. And so I just want to go back and do a little recap because we've talked about so much.
Yes.
Yeah. And this all started with our interest in your survey of 16 to 25 year olds and what's going on in their life with money. And I had never thought about the fact that these kids witnessed and grew and were small during the Great Recession. And what you said, though, is that they are still very optimistic, sometimes a little overly so, that they believe that they will do better than their parents financially and that they're going to receive an inheritance. And we might want to disabuse them of that notion because you said only 10% of Americans do that.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact stat, but it's really small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our kids, though, they're, you know, amidst the good news of, yes, they're optimistic, yes, they are doing things, but they also are creating some not so great money habits. They are tending to incur large debt and miss the payoffs. They so essentially have this bad habit of living beyond their means. And so what we can do is start working with them and teaching them and also looking at ourselves to see where we're doing things like that. Help our kids to learn how to budget, start saving for retirement, teaching them that 10 to 15% of all their income should go to savings. And we also need to be aware that somehow in our society, there are things going on that are hurting our girls, that even though they are, according to the survey, showing more determination in having financial independence, they are spending less and more likely to have a second job. They also have 60% less in savings. So keep an eye on that as a parent. Make sure that we're teaching them and that we're teaching them beyond the savings and the budget and going to the investment side. And if we don't understand about the investing, then learn together or start reaching out and learning on our own. Also direct our kids to resources where they can learn. Help them to understand good debt versus bad debt, things that appreciate in value, like a home or an education, versus things that depreciate. And you had mentioned your website, which we'll put a link also in the show notes, to schwabmoneywise.com. And while you were talking, I quick pulled it up because I had to see. And yeah. Great. There are some great tools on there. So we can start using some of those tools to help our kids. Carrie, there's so much here, and we've really appreciated that. We have the link for the MoneyWise, Schwab MoneyWise. Is there anyplace else? Is there another website that you wanted to share with us today?
That's the primary one that I know at the top. I have to admit, I don't study everybody else's websites, so that's me. And then the federal government has some websites. CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, has some things as well. Social Security has things. You know, there's a lot of government that's doing a lot around financial literacy.
Perfect.
But I also wanted, I thought your recap was really wonderful. I do want to just say one last thing, and that is that, for all of us, learning about money is a continuation, and it's a lifelong pursuit. And so it's upon all of us to continue to learn. And, as we know, life evolves, right? Sandy, you mentioned about, making some changes later in life with your, with kids and so forth. So everything, let's start our children young so they have the right habits right out of the gate. But again, just always stay on top of it. Always try to learn, and knowing that life's going to change and you just want to be on top of it.
Well, thank you so much, Carrie. This has been eye-opening, and I know that our listeners are going to take away so much great things from everything you've shared with us today, as well as the website schwabmoneywise.com. So much great information there. And for you listeners, money can be a tough topic, but know that you've got this and we've got resources that can help you. You are a mighty parent. And this is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler saying see you next week.